time for a senior moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm your host, Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio today with Doug Schaefer, who's my co-host from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging, and we have two guests today in the studio, Michelle Rogers and Liz Rathfun. Michelle, would you tell us a little bit about yourself, who you work for?
I work for Consanus Health Services, and we provide the rehab services at Clatsop Care Health and Rehabilitation Center here in Astoria.
And Liz, how about you?
I'm the administrator of Clatsop Retirement Village. We're an assisted living facility associated with Clatsop Care Health District.
Okay, and these two folks are in the studio with us today to talk about an issue with elders and people who are caring for elders, and that is, how do you communicate with an older person who may have difficulty communicating with you? So how do you keep that communication good for you and for them? Why don't we start with you, Liz? What are some of the things that can be communication issues for people who are older?
I think one of the biggest things people think about when they have communication difficulties with the elderly is hearing deficit.
So when people, I would imagine that when someone is older, I know I have a 95-year-old dad, and he tells me a lot about how he feels about getting older, and a lot of it isn't terribly positive sometimes. But one of the things is hearing, mm-hmm. that if you can't hear, you feel very isolated. Mm-hmm. I know if his hearing aids are acting up, it really causes him a lot of anxiety because he feels cut off mm-hmm. from other people. So what are some of the things that you see as a professional relating to hearing loss, and how somebody in a family is trying to talk to somebody who can't hear them?
I think they really need to get down on the person's level, make sure that they're giving very good eye contact, and that the person is able to read their lips, even if they can't actually hear what they're saying, and that you ask that person continually, do you understand? Can you tell me what it is that I just said? You know, so that they can kind of making sure that you know that they understand the conversation that you're having. And I think really getting down on someone's level and not standing above them really makes the conversation a lot better and more comfortable.
Well, we were talking before the show a little bit about, how do you frame your speech when you're talking to someone who can't hear you well? Mm-hmm. So maybe I can ask you that, Michelle. We talked a little bit about speaking clearly but not yelling.
Yeah, I think that we have a misnomer sometimes in that we think if someone is hard of hearing, we have to yell at them or talk in a different pitch. We definitely don't want to have our voice in a high pitch because it is harder to hear. We lose those fibers first. But we don't want to really distort our voice either because the hearing aid will distort it as well. So you want to talk slowly, you want to speak at them, not yell at them, because again, the hearing aids or not hearing aids will distort that. You can ask them if they have a ear that they hear better out of, and then you would direct your speaking towards that ear, but still stay in front of them. Same would be true as if they're set up at home where they have a phone by their bed, you would want their phone on that dominant ear side. I think the other thing is you have to make sure you remember that people who are hard of hearing don't automatically have cognitive deficits. And sometimes we put the two together. We act as though they aren't able to comprehend what we're saying, but it's more they just can't hear. And so you want to make sure you're differentiating that and not just assuming that because they can't hear you, they don't actually understand what you're saying.
Well, I think it's important. I mean, an element in all of these things that we talk about on the show is kind of maintaining your respect for the person that you're dealing with, even if it seems like they're not really meeting you halfway, mm-hmm. I guess mm-hmm. is sort right. of the thing. What are some of the other issues that can cause, in this whole realm of communication with elders or people with disabilities, what are some of the other issues, let me throw that question back to you, Liz, that can come up that are not, say, hearing related, but other things?
Some elderly have difficulty with aphasia, not being able to really get out the words that they're trying to say.
And that's a separate thing from, say, Alzheimer's or mm-hmm. dementia.
Okay, it could be stroke-related or mm-hmm. other conditions that could cause that. I think the main thing with aphasia is to really give the person time to listen to what you're saying, comprehend it, and think about it, and give them time to be able to say and not put words into their mouth and just assume that you think that you know what they're saying.
You can use things too, such as pictures. Often will help you be able to communicate better with those people. They'll be able to maybe point to a picture. So are you hurting somewhere? Have a body picture and have them point versus having them have to speak it. Sometimes they can make a better connection with a visual description or a body having them show you on their body or your body, that also can help a lot, is just change the medium with which you're trying to get them to communicate. Sometimes too, they will preserve a written communication and not just a verbal. So if they lose their verbal, sometimes they can do handwritten things for you. So dry erase boards are great. And that's also a good thing to have around for people who are hearing impaired or have those hearing deficits, is something to write on a tablet near them. So if they aren't understanding what you're saying, you could at least jot a note for them and they could actually see and have that conversation with you.
Then what are some other, what besides aphasia?
Cognition?
Yeah, cognitive decline.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, main topics we were talking about was patients who are being diagnosed with dementia, and we're seeing more Alzheimer's patients who are staying home or in the community now as the aging population is getting bigger. We are seeing more community-dwelling people with cognitive deficits. And so there are lots of different strategies that you can use to work with them. One important thing to know is that oftentimes there's a response delay that just it. If you think of it as we want to kick our leg, it takes us a minute to make our foot do what we want it to do. The same is true when we're processing what we're hearing. And so you have to allow for the time for them to process what you're saying before you jump in. And we live in such a fast-paced society that it's hard to sometimes stop and wait after you've asked a question once. But if you remember that if you ask a question once and then you re-ask it again, they're having to reset and rethink about the second question. So it's important to kind of give them time to respond and slow down. All the same other strategies come into play, so looking at them eye to eye, slowing down your body language and your body, mimicking what you're saying. So if you're asking them to brush their hair, maybe doing the movement as well. So I'm going to brush my hair and I'm making the movement with my arm. Or have you brushed your teeth today, and show them how that might look. Talking about things not as did you talk to her today? You would say something like, did you talk to Liz today? Getting rid of the pronouns so that you're actually using the specific task that you're asking. Have you been able to, could you put your shirt in the laundry basket versus put that in the laundry basket? Helps to kind of reorient them, as well as make sure that they're understanding what that or it or he or she is.
So those two terms, people may not be completely familiar with them, but the term dementia and Alzheimer's, are they two separate things? Maybe, Liz, I could ask you that. Are they two separate things, or is dementia a consequence of Alzheimer's, or are they two different medical situations?
So there are several different kinds of dementia. Dementia can be caused by vascular disease. So sometimes people will have days where they're very clear and they're able to do their everyday tasks, and then whatever blood vessel in their brain constricts, and then they're more confused day to day.
And so that's different from Alzheimer's, which
yes.
is a specific diagnosis.
Alzheimer's is specific okay. diagnosis for sure. Okay.
And usually, it's, as far as I know, Alzheimer's can only be diagnosed after the end of life.
Right. The only way to be 100% sure, which is a bad way to get a diagnosis
because
sure
you
is, have
isn't
to be
it?
Dead. But that's the only way they can actually diagnose it exactly, and that's by doing the tissue samples of the brain. But another thing about Alzheimer's as opposed to other dementias can go on for a lifetime, like mm-hmm. the vascular, or it might be it goes on for just a short period of time. UTIs are famous for introducing some dementia. It might be your meds are mixed up, or, you know, so there are some short-term dementia things, which means you're just cognitively not connecting mm-hmm. with everything.
And can you just clarify, since people may not know what UTI means?
Urinary tract infection.
Right. Yes, I know that. That's really quite startling, that how much of an effect that can have
yes.
on an older person. I've experienced that with my dad. Wow. It was mm-hmm. a relief to know that something worse wasn't happening. But
yeah.
anyway,
also, anesthesias following a surgery can cause increased confusion. Right. That's why at the care center and even in the hospital systems now, we're doing a lot of cognitive assessments on patients right after surgeries or when they first come into us, so that we can see where they are there. And then they should progress, or often will progress to a higher level of ability as that clears out of their system, or as the antibiotics for the UTI work, we'll see that clearing. The nice thing is that we can tell then, is it sort of a transient cognitive decline, which is what we tend to call it, versus dementia or Alzheimer's, because you just don't know specifically. From a therapy standpoint, we're treating the symptoms and the what we're seeing presented to us. Whether it's got a name of one way or another doesn't matter to us as much as we're looking at where are we. So if we see it clearing, it's awesome. And if we don't, then we can give strategies to families that should be all on how to help manage that person at home or help support them to be the most independent they can within those deficits.
Right. Liz, let me ask you this. So then people can expect that that this is intermittent, that dementia or, I mean, hearing seems to be a decline that's pretty steady, but dementia can come and go, right? I mean, there's sometimes when people will be very clear and other times when they won't be, and that's something that caregivers have to sort of expect, is that?
Well, I think it can come and go based on, you know, your health status, so it could be a urinary tract infection or, like Doug said, your medications might be out of whack, or you may have an electrolyte imbalance or something like that that's causing a change in cognition. But dementia can go very, very slowly. So you can just, you know, start to notice very small things. That may last 5 years. But then you may have more and more things that you're forgetting or family members are noticing where they're really having to compensate then for their loved one. Dementia, it can be years and years.
Okay.
And I think, too, like Liz was saying about family members compensating, is that sometimes you don't actually notice how much you've been picking up for your family member until something big happens. And you kind of look back and go, oh, wow, I am doing all of their bills now, or I really am having to set up their pill minders now for them completely. Where it was just a little bit at a time you kind of took on, oh, I'll take the mail this time or whatever.
Yeah.
And so we don't, because dementias or cognitive declines are progressive and they're often slowly progressing, we don't always notice how bad our family member has become until later down the road, and you look back and go, oh, or they get into a medical situation and you come and see us at the care center and we say, oh, their cognitive level is really low, we need them to have 24-hour supervision, and you're saying, wait, there wasn't an episode, mm-hmm. but if you really looked back at it, you notice that, oh yeah, oh, I did pick that, oh, I did take all of that on, oh, I was doing all of that for them.
And I think part of that, too, is for the family members in particular, it's easier if I just do all the bills than help you figure them out,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I can do them this quick and it's going to take a while. So I'll just do it and you don't have to worry about it. Well, pretty soon, you put in everything.
And that's the overhelping issue.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So can you talk a little bit more about that, Doug?
Well, overhelping is just a term I use when, or sometimes I say when help attacks. it's kind of you come in and you swoop in and you're going to rescue and you're going to do everything. But like they were talking about, you then don't see where the decline has gone to, how far it's gone. And you tend to, it's also tied in a little bit with denial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's mom or dad, you know, you don't want to say, okay, mom and dad are on the way out, or this isn't really my mom or dad anymore because of the dementia or whatever. So you overcompensate and you keep things light and you sort of mm-hmm. blow off other things and you keep helping, which, I mean, it's good to be helpful, and it comes from a good motive, but what you're also doing is robbing that other person of the opportunity to sort of maintain some cognitive skills and to maintain some activity. So it becomes overhelping when it's sort of to their detriment.
Yeah, well, you know, I noticed that in my own life with my dad in restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
We go out to eat usually once a week, and the waitress will look at me to tell what he wants. And I've sort of recognized that on my own, and I thought, no, I should let him do that. He can do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that she looks at me, or whoever it is, will look at me like, what does he want? And say, well, why don't you ask him?
Exactly.
So I've been trying to not overhelp that way.
Well, it's interesting, too, because it sort of alluded to earlier. When I was a case manager, I had a client who had been blind since birth. You know, very independent, dynamite lady. But she said what used to annoy her, because we were talking about the doctors, you know, mm-hmm. and how they talk to people sometimes. She said, I would go in there, and if it's a new doctor, they're saying, now, here's what we have to do. She said, I tell them, I'm blind, I'm not stupid, you know. Because there's this automatic thing that happens with some people that if it's a hearing deficit or a sight deficit or whatever it might be, that we have to talk to them like they're in the first grade.
Yeah.
No, and like you were talking about the tone of voice and all of that. No, we just need to be more direct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult, but people slide into that automatically.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a dignity issue.
Oh, absolutely.
You want people to be as dignified as possible and encourage independence. The more independent they are, the better they feel about themselves, and the easier it is to help to care for them.
And the more active we help them, keep their brains. So the more that you can help them do, like we all know mental exercises, you know, the crossword puzzles, mm-hmm. the Sudokus, those kind of things, or just in conversation, have that conversation, because the more you're bringing back, whether it's long-term memory or short-term events or reading some papers or anything, that's going to help them stay engaged in their life, and it's going to help them continue to communicate with you, because they're going to keep their level of verbal skill up as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just want to take a moment and remind everyone that you are listening to A Senior Moment on Coast Community Radio. I'm Joanne Rideout. Today we're talking about communication tips for people in your family who have disabilities of one kind or another. Since it's Senior Moment, we're talking generally about age-related disabilities like hearing problems, dementia, aphasia, which is where people have trouble expressing themselves. And so we're talking about that, how family members can be genuinely supportive of their loved ones and really assess what's happening to them and kind of meet them where they are. So, Liz, we talked a little bit before the show about things people can do in their home to make it easier for. So what are some of those things? What does that mean?
So I think setting up for the person at home. So if they have the hearing deficit, that we keep the phone on their good side, that the alarm clock's on their good side, that if they need cues, maybe to remember to lock the door, we put a note right next to the door that says, "Mom, remember to lock the door tonight." Just those visual reminders sometimes are what people need. Maybe a note on the mirror that says, "Don't forget to brush your teeth tonight before you go to bed." Those sorts of things can really, you know, spark something if you're forgetting.
And if you get in the habit too, as people are transitioning through into they have a little bit of decline, they aren't too far down the road yet, having a memory book for them where my great aunt is 92, I think, and she writes down everything. She journals every day. So if she has a conversation on the phone, she journals who she talked to, what day it was, and what the kind of summary of what the conversation was. And she's done that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But she's a little OCD about it, actually. But I think it's a really
great... That can be good sometimes.
Exactly. But she'll refer back, because she's done it for so long, it's been just part of her habit, that she'll make a note of... she also has a calendar, like a monthly calendar, so she'll keep track of her appointments, but then note med change if it was on there or whatever was done with the doctor, just to allow her to reference and remember what she's forgotten. And I think it's another good strategy we can use as caregivers too, is that we can help people remember where they've been. We have a resident at the care center now who's not remembering if she's brushed her teeth, and it's really an important thing to her and she always asks about it. And so we have her journal that she brushed her teeth in her handwriting, so she sees that it's her, and then what time she did it. And so she can look back and go, "Oh, I did do it at this time." So memory books are a great strategy to have by the phone or have near on your desk at home to be able to remember.
And I think that's also good for, even if you're setting up a pill reminder or a pill box for a family member, still letting them, you know, write down, "I took my morning meds today at 8, and I'm taking them at 5 o'clock in the evening," so that they still have that check mark. They may not know what those 4 pills are in that bottle or that box, but they know that they did it, and that's their way of cueing themselves to remember.
Good.
That brings up a good point too, as far as medication changes are one of the biggest things that we see where there's errors. People are very good at looking at their pill minder and saying, "I take 2 blue pills in the morning, I take 1 pink pill," and then all of a sudden they go to the doctor or they have a hospitalization and they get a yellow pill, and they don't know what to do with the yellow pill. And if they can't read the directions well on the bottle, they aren't understanding what PRN means or as needed. There's almost always when we see the medication errors, and those can cause serious health deficits or to happen, health issues. So it's something to always watch and follow up with your parents. If you notice that they're having even a tiny little bit of cognitive change, that you're really checking with them. And where's that new med? Did you get that one taken, Mom? Or make sure their pill binder's set up well.
Mm-hmm.
There are cognitive testing that can be done where we take people through that. At the care center, we make sure that we go through a medication management task before they leave us, and they look at their new meds and can they set it up well and are they doing it well, and then we make our recommendation, you know, they should probably have that set up by you versus themselves, or yes, have them set it up, but you better check it, those kind of
or
things.
Bubble packs.
Bubble packs. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe I can ask both of you this. Well, let me start with you, Liz. Your organizations, that they're both offering care services. People, you're talking about interfacing with people. Are they sent to you by doctors, Liz? Is that how they get to be coming in to be assessed by you?
So for assisted living at Clatsop Retirement Village, it's usually a resident choice if they want to move in, because they're kind of moving into an apartment on their own. But if a primary care physician has to agree to follow their care while they're at our facility. So the doctor says, we send orders to the doctor and we ask, do you feel that this person is able to live in the assisted living environment? Do you feel that they would be appropriate for that level of care? And then they also kind of give us direction on what medications the person should be taking, as well as if they should be taking them on their own or not.
So then do people often refer themselves, or do you find a lot of family members bringing people in and saying it's time, or both?
For assisted living, yeah. I would say that it's a mix of both, but mostly it's a lot of families come and either put their parents on the waiting list or come talk to us after they've been at home kind of helping their parent for a while, and they say, you know, I think now's the time. Sometimes an event happens. They go to the ER 4 times in a weekend. Sometimes they leave the water running or the gas on the stove or something like that. But sometimes the resident themselves comes and says, you know, I don't want to cook anymore. I don't want to do my own housekeeping or all that stuff. It's just too much. With the Clatsop Care Center, they're more referred from a hospital setting for rehabilitation, and that's kind of where Michelle and her team kind of come into play there.
Yeah, so the rehab center is a transition from the hospital to, they aren't quite good enough to get home. They need more rehab, more time,
right.
and more
services.
That's
usually temporary.
That's usually a temporary stay. Oftentimes, once they come in with us, what we do on every patient is we do a cognitive assessment as well as mobility and balance assessments. And so we look at, are they really thriving at home or have they been struggling? Where are they? What level of assistance or support do they need outside of here? And then we'll do training with the family if it is just to go home and they're fine, with some support from you as a family member, or we say, you know, they'd probably be better at assisted living. That might be a good thing to look at, or a family home, or long-term care. So we kind of help to facilitate where's going to be their, what we recommend is where their best setting might be. We also provide outpatient services in the community. So you can, if your mom or dad is struggling a little bit, you can come in with an order from your physician for an outpatient assessment of their cognitive levels. That's true at any outpatient therapy clinic where there's an occupational or speech therapist. They should be able to do cognitive testing and help support you as the caregiver as well as your parent in maintaining as much independence as possible.
Okay.
And also get strategies to how to help, because it's not, you can help people maintain a level. As their disease process deteriorates, they're going to deteriorate too, but it's not just to throw your hands at it and, oh, we have to compensate. Mm-hmm. We can help them have strategies like the memory book, you know, like setting up their pill minder, but keeping them on task, that'll help. So that's what therapists in the area can do, and I know we have some amazing therapists in
okay.
the whole.
Great. Thanks, Michelle. So I have a question about something, Liz, that you said, and I want to ask you and Doug both this. Is there a waiting list to get into these facilities? Should people be planning ahead then? Let me ask you that first.
For some facilities there are. Clatsop Retirement Village does have a waiting list. A lot of people wait until it's too late. Basically, a family member comes in and they want to be able to get their mom and dad in a month. And sometimes we don't necessarily have openings, or other facilities don't have openings. So it's good to get in, get the information about cost. If you have any insurances that may pay for it, like long-term care insurance or veterans aid and attendance benefits, see if those things are available to you prior to when you actually need it. Get on the list prior to when you actually need those services, because that way you're prepared when the time does come.
Okay, and Doug, what about on the peninsula or in Pacific County? Do people need to plan ahead?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's such a moving target, because a lot of times they're in, and it could be also adult adult family homes and
oh,
assisted
yes,
livings
right,
and all
right.
of that.
We've talked about that too.
But it all it's a moving target, and then probably more so in the adult family homes because they usually have a higher level of care. Mm-hmm. Populations change because you know people die and then they move out and all of these other things happen. And in assisted living, that's a little more long term because, like Liz was saying, it's like it's an apartment basically, and so they're often full. But there's also things that you need to check out ahead of time to see if the type of facility you're thinking of for your parents that you want them to look at, is that even in your community? Because sometimes they aren't. It's like in Pacific County, there's only one skilled nursing facility in Pacific County now, and it's in North County. So there are different things that they need to check into. Check the insurances. If they're really low income or close to that, they would probably go in and then spin down and then get on Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to see if that facility accepts Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different things to look at. And there's a lot of variances, even in assisted livings, at different levels of care.
Okay.
So it really pays to plan ahead, to check it out, to see what they want. And just to also take off something on the question that you asked them about, is it usually the family that brings them in? Or sometimes it's just like Liz said, you know, it's somebody... the example that always comes to mind was a gentleman I worked with that he was widowed, and the kids all lived elsewhere, and he's in this huge house, and the house is getting to be too much for him, and he lives in like three of the rooms, and he's lonely. And so he went and looked at one of the assisted livings and realized that, I know three or four of the people that are in here. Mm-hmm. And to him, it was more of, I'm going to go there. I can hang out with people.
Yeah,
I can get the help that I need. And I can have some socialization.
Yeah,
a lot of mental stimulation too. When you get to be in that widowed situation, or where it's just you and your wife, but you might have been more social and mobile before. These settings are great and ripe for that. They have activities. They have bring people in from the community. They have outings. It really, a lot of times, I think we have a negative connotation of moving mom into a facility. Whereas
you're putting her in the home.
You're putting them in the home.
Right.
But even in
right.
a long-term care setting, we've got people there all the time with them. There's always someone that's the activity going on. There's, you know, things that are getting scheduled for people that are more stimulating than just being at home and sitting there by themselves.
Right.
I think that if we can frame it in a different way, it might help make the transition easier for them, but also for us, as we see it not as that mom's getting worse, but it's like, wow, this is such a cool opportunity for her to be around people and activity, but still have her own.
Well, I think we are just about out of time. So at the end of the show, we always give contact information. Liz, can we start with you? You're Liz Rathfun from Clatsop Retirement Village.
Our website is clatsopcare.org, and you can actually see all the services that our health district provides from that website. So we have Clatsop Retirement Village, our assisted living facility, Clatsop Care Health and Rehabilitation Center, that's our skilled nursing. We have Clatsop Care in-home care services, and I just recently opened Clatsop Care Memory Community. So we do have quite the continuum of care here in this area. We are not all on one campus. We're a bit spread out, but we have that ability to transition into those different levels of care once you're part of the health district.
Okay, and Michelle Rogers, you are the rehab director at Clatsop Care Health and Rehabilitation Center. Is your contact information the same as Liz's? Or
yes, for the moment. Okay. To get a hold of me, that would be how you'd get to me, as the rehab center. My company that I work for is Consonus Health, and we have facilities all over the Northwest and in California, so it's another... ConsonusHealth.com would be another place if you're in out of the area or looking for places out of the area. Those would be buildings that would be affiliated with Consonus.
And Doug, Olympic Area Agency on Aging.
The South County office is in Long Beach, and that's at 642-3634. In North County, it's in Raymond, and that's 942-2177. And our website is o3a.org.
And Doug's agency is a tremendous resource for all sorts of information relating to elder issues. So if you have questions about this or anything else in Washington State, you can call them, go to their website. In Oregon, you can also go to Northwest Senior and Disability Services, and they're on the web. You can Google them. And
also, one thing I forgot to mention about the Oregon Commission for the Blind is a wonderful resource if you have anyone who's visually impaired to get adaptive equipment for the home, so things like larger button phones that have big numbers, any kind of readers. If your parents are big readers with macular degeneration, they'll bring out a reader for you. They'll do a whole home assessment. So you just can, I don't know what the actual website is, but if you look up Oregon Commission for the Blind, that they'll get those resources no matter what your visual deficit is.
Wow, that's great information. Yeah. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you so much for being my guests today.
Thank you.
And we will see you next time on A Senior Moment.